It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. A lot of folks are talking about today's First in the Nation New Hampshire primary. The Pennsylvania primary is taking place over 2 months from now on Tuesday, April 26th. The question is, will it still be relevant? A lot of it, of course, depends on what happens today. I'm joined now by phone by Terry Madonna, director of the Franklin and Marshall College Poll and professor of public affairs at Franklin and Marshall. Terry Madonna, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
My pleasure as always.
And you can join the conversation with a question or comment at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email ESSPGH at WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. So, Terry Madonna, let's begin with that big question. Will the Pennsylvania primary still be relevant when it takes place on April 26th?
Well, outside chance. How's that for an answer? And as you accurately point out, it really does depend on how competitive the two races are after New Hampshire. But after New Hampshire, we have South Carolina and Nevada. Then we have something called Super Tuesday, 11 events on March 1. Then on March 14, we have another handful of events. And March 15, we have, guess what? March 15, think of this, Ohio, Florida, and Illinois. Not exactly small states, right? With a lot of delegates in play. What has to happen is that the races have to remain competitive with at least two people. Probably less so on the Democratic side, on the Republican side, if several of these candidates, particularly on the in the so-called establishment lane, like Kasich and Bush, for example, along with Rubio, can remain in the race along with Cruz and Trump. There's an outside chance. We have not been competitive, meaning, let me rephrase that, we have not mattered since 1976.
Jimmy Carter?
Meaning that what happened here had a big, you know, was part of the process, the important part. No one had clinched the nomination, and that was Bush 41, as we like to say, George Herbert Walker Bush, against Gerry Ford. In 1976, in our state. Now we've had some that have been interesting, like the Obama-Clinton battle in 2008. They spent about 4 weeks nonstop campaigning in our state. Hillary Clinton won by 10 points, but Obama had enough delegate lead so that it really didn't amount to very many new delegates for Clinton, and not enough to overtake then Senator Obama.
When you mentioned 1976, it's hard not to think of Jimmy Carter. What was happening on the Democratic side in Pennsylvania by then?
Yeah, well, Carter hold on a minute, unfortunately, I guess.
I told you to turn that phone off, Terry.
Yeah, I got it. Carter was very well situated by this time to win the nomination. The other interesting one was Ted Kennedy in 1980 did win our state, defeated then President Carter. And, in 76, Carter won our state and clinched the nomination. He probably would have won it anyway, but he clinched it, meaning he secured enough delegates to win. So moving along, as you think about it, there's this outside chance that our state can be competitive, as I said. I think it would need a number of things to happen. Competitiveness, and the difficulty is once you get a big lead in the delegate count, it's really hard for somebody who's not doing well to catch up. You follow that? You just can't catch up, and it's all about the delegates. The other thing, without getting too much into the weeds, that why the Republicans could be more competitive is they don't use all or nothing, meaning you win a state, you win all of the delegates, until March 15. So all the processes that are taking place now, you only win a proportion of the delegates. You can't win, for example, if there are 40 on the ballot in a state, you can't win all 40.
Right.
If you just win, more votes than any of the other candidates. And that's likely to make the Republican race more competitive. After March 14, states can use all or nothing, meaning you win a state, you win all the delegates. Uh, So we're going to have to wait and see what happens in New Hampshire. Will probably winnow the field down. There are 9 active Republicans in the race right now. 9 active, whatever active means in terms of the actual campaigning. But I would think that all 3 establishment lane candidates can't come out of it whole. I mean, Christie's not polling very well. Rubio, you would think, would be likely to continue. Cruz will Rubio will continue. Kasich is doing well. He's likely to continue. And we'll have to see if Bush can hang up in the top 2 or 3.
Why is the Pennsylvania primary so late on the calendar? I mean, we're an important, large, and historic state, and yet we're behind all these other states, Nevada, for crying out loud, and our neighbor, Ohio.
Then you do the southern swing, as I said, on March 1, March 14, and March 15, you'll have a whole bunch of states, many of them southern and western states, smaller states, to be sure, and states that aren't competitive. You're exactly right.
So why is Pennsylvania so far back? Why is Pennsylvania so far back?
Because we normally have a May primary 3 of the 4 years. In the 4th year, they moved the primary up to April. It's April 26 this year. Well, because it's been there before these primaries and caucuses mattered. And the legislature has been reluctant to move it, in large part because lawmakers understand how it works. They understand how they can benefit from it. They don't want to move the petition filing period to get on the ballot up into the holiday season, which they would have to do. Now it takes place, you know, in February and March. They don't want to have this going on during the holiday season. But I think mostly it's because they're comfortable with it themselves. That would have to be done by the state legislature, changing the date of the primary. And there have been bills introduced over the years to do it, but lawmakers are comfortable with the system they have, and so they don't feel there's any real reason to change. And quite frankly, I just haven't seen a lot of, you know, sort of diehard pressure, let's go do it now. You know, there's been almost no incentive to do it. I think what they don't like also is to run in a primary where you have these presidential races going on, knowing that it will bring a certain, might bring different voters out. You know what I mean? They want control. They want them. They like stability. They don't. They're adverse to change, and so all of those probably play a role.
But we know at least that it can be moved up. It's just a matter of finding the will to do it.
Oh yeah, many states moved them forward into March. I mean, I've argued for doing that. By the way, I don't think people much care what a college professor thinks.
Sure, we do.
But I argue why not do it. And you're right about this. I mean, we're going to find out this year in the presidential election whether we remain competitive. 6 straight elections, the Democrats won. But if you go back to 2000, 2004, 2008, we were in the top 5 for states visited by the presidential candidates. 50 states, we were in the top 5. Money on advertising in the state, top 5. In the whole country. And in 2012, the candidates didn't even come until the last 10 days, presidential candidates, Mitt Romney and, of course, President Obama seeking re-election. And only because Romney figured out he couldn't win Ohio and he suddenly came to Pennsylvania realizing he had to win a big state's electoral vote. So this is, in a sense, one of those sort of, might be one of those watershed moments, you know, where we're going to see how competitive we really are. And that remains to be seen. At this point, no one has a real clue about how competitive. We don't know who the nominees are. We don't know what issues the voters what issues will matter to the voters come November 8.
It's Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest is Terry Madonna, director of the Franklin and Marshall College Poll and professor of public affairs at Franklin and Marshall. And Terry, I wanted to turn to what's happening in Pennsylvania today with Governor Wolf giving his 2016-2017 budget address, even though we don't have a budget in place for the current fiscal year. You, among your recent Franklin and Marshall polls, showed there is tremendous dissatisfaction among registered voters with state government. How bad is it? How bad does it look from the polling that you've done?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, it's in the polls that I've done going back to the mid-1990s, it's the highest highest negative feeling by the voters about the state in the direction of the state. I think that comes in part because of the budget quagmire. I think it comes, and when we ask voters what's the most important problem, they used to cite things like the economy or education. Education, by the way, was the single most important vote issue in the 2014 governor's election, in which, as you know, Tom Corbett was defeated by Tom Wolf. First time that's happened in modern history. So think about it this way. Government and politicians are now the most important problem. What does that translate into? The budget impasse and all the drama surrounding it. What about lawmakers being convicted of various crimes over the course of the year? What about a state treasurer who had to resign pleading guilty to extortion? What about all of the consternation and the kerfuffle over one Kathleen Kane that you know, every week is in the news? And this week, by the way, is back in the news because the Senate apparently tomorrow is going to try to, Senate Republicans are going to put the removal by address, two-thirds vote in the Senate, on the docket for the Senate to vote on tomorrow. And at the same time, the House is considering impeaching her.
Right.
I mean, imagine all, and the pornographic email, does it scandal, does it strike anybody that the folks are upset with government and politicians?
Well, and today you've got the governor giving a budget address, even though
right.
we don't have a budget in place for the current fiscal year.
Correct.
What do you make of this bizarre situation today
yeah.
with the governor saying, well, you know, it's on the calendar, I have to do it, but it, yep. to a lot of people it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's, you know, there's this long tradition in history of the governor giving a budget message. The problem, of course, is now he asked for more than $2 billion in spending, larger than the budget compromise that he reached with the Senate, which was ultimately not agreed to in the House, that led to the current budget, which he vetoed. He blue-lined 20% of it, I should say. But he's asked for a myriad of taxes. The response that I listened to just before I got on air with you was, what out of the Republicans was, you can imagine what they were saying about raising taxes by $2 billion, income tax hike, sales tax exemptions removed, shale tax. And so the two sides couldn't be further apart, and this drama is going to continue. Look, Governor Wolf was elected on the platform of increasing education spending and doing a shale tax by 10 points. Historic victory, defeating an incumbent governor. First time that's happened since we changed the Constitution and so that a governor could seek re-election. First one, Milton Schapp, 1974. Okay. Now, Republicans elected to do what? Cut spending, hold the line on taxes. 60% of the legislature's new within the last 10 years. And what did they get? Many of them get elected on? No new taxes, cut the size of government down, and the majority of them are in safe districts. And so you've got Mars and Venus going on here. You know, you've got two different planets rotating and now colliding with each other. To use a very bad analogy, I guess.
That makes sense.
But the fact of the matter is that the legislature is not going to give the governor a $2 billion tax hike.
So we're going to go round and round again?
And by the way, by April and May, you know, he vetoed line item, blue lined, as they say, 20% of the budget. At some point on your news programs, you're going to be covering, oh, this school district threatening to shut down, or we're going to have property tax hikes, or this human service in some county out in the south, all over the state, but I'm just using the example of in your listening area. Oh, guess what? We're going to have to stop this this service to the voters, or we're going to have to shut down early. I mean, these complaints are going to pick up in another month or two, and we're going to go round and round again with the two different visions of what ought to happen in the state.
So in 30 seconds or less, Terry, Governor Wolf is saying we're facing a crisis. It sounds like you're agreeing with him.
Well, I mean, I think that there can be some middle compromise. I thought the framework that they agreed, a little more than a billion, that the Senate Republicans and the governor agreed on, made sense. You were going to put you know, about $365 million more in education spending. You're going to have a slight increase, do something with a hybrid pension plan for state employees and school teachers. And you would, you know, open up the liquor stores, not privatize, but do more retail. That compromise with the Senate Republicans and the governor seemed reasonable to me. That's how I'll put it.
Right.
And obviously didn't go along.
No, they didn't. And unfortunately, we're out of time, Terry, but I want to thank you for being with us. Terry Madonna, director of the Franklin and Marshall College Poll. We appreciate it. Tonight at 8, be sure to tune to 90.5 WESA for NPR's coverage of the First in the Nation New Hampshire primary. That's tonight at 8. Tomorrow, Mayor Bill Peduto joins us in studio. Until then, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.